Hi, thank you for inviting me. So I'm going to be talking about the paper I wrote with David Bernstein and Juan Maldacena. And though I put lots of things in the title, I'll probably just talk about strings from an equal force of Van Mills and just mention a few other things which one might do. So a summary of the talk is as follows. I'll just start saying a few words about the whole idea of talks relating large engineering and string theory, and some words about the ADS-CFT correspondence and the questions which were left unanswered and which we're trying to address. Then I'm going to say a few words about Penrose limits and DP waves. I'm going then to talk a little bit about string quantization on these DP waves, then go to the main part of the topic, the string terms of Van Mills. I'm going to be deriving the string spectrum starting from field theory side. I'm going to be doing next the perturbative computation, trying to calculating the first correction to the energy of a certain state. And then I'll describe an equivalent, a different formulation in terms of discretized world sheets, where we'll try to reproduce the full energy of the string state, and discuss what kind of field diagrams were neglected in this kind of computation and why we neglect it. If I have time, I'm going to be saying a few words about the M theory on the PP wave, and in particular about the D0 Lagrangian and its supersymmetric solutions. And then I'm going to discuss what future work we're interested in, open string string interactions with matrix models. Then I'll be concluding. So long time ago, Toft had this nice idea that large N Young-Mills theory is related somehow to string theory. So his observation was that if you take the limit where the number of colors goes to infinity, while you keep g squared n fixed and small, then you have a nice property. If you look at Young-Mills diagrams with very high number of loops, they look some sort of like a discretized surface, which is equated with a string world sheet. Gauge fields being in a adjoint representation are described as double lines, and quarks being in a fundamental represented as single lines, and they correspond to the boundary of this surface. And the difference between planar and non-planar diagrams is given by the fact that the corresponding world sheet surface has holes or not. And the point was that if you look at the coupling factor of such a diagram, you see that there's a piece, a vertex factor, which comes with g squared n, and then a factor which is topological, depends on the number of holes, the number of quark loops, which means that one can equate the string coupling with 1 over n. So he had this nice idea that there should be some way in which large N theory should be described by string theory, but no one knew really how to make sense of that. And
it's not really what we call JS, right? One or whatever. So JS is not what we call string.
Well, I mean, in this picture, if you take this at face value, you know, this just says, of course, it's not trivial. I'm just saying that the factor in here is just for a corresponding world sheet is a coupling factor with the same power. And of course, It's not what happens in the...
The difference just rescales the exponent on the hooked coupler. If you go from one to the...
Right, right. So then, years ago came the ESCFT correspondence, which made the realization, at least in spirit, of this idea, where if you look at a large number of V3 brains, the near horizon geometry looks like LA5 versus 5, and so LA5 versus 5 metric, I've written it in this form, which I'll be using later on, and the size of this, the scale of this metric is given by factor R, which is related to the string coupling and number of brains in this way. And the statement is that this kind of the string theory on this space is supposed to be the same as Spurrier-Niels gauge group SUN. And MP4 Spurrier-Niels is a conformal field theory. So it's observables are correlators in the Euclidean space. So that is what is related to on the string theory side. The particular limit one takes is number of V3 brains going to infinity, or number of colors in the random picture. And G squared N is fixed and large. And on the string side, you are thinking of alpha prime going to zero. So in the sense, string theory is approximated by supergravity. And gauge invariant operators are related to boundary values for supergravity fields. More precise, description of that. Well, no, I guess it's that one computes these correlators in conformal field theory by evaluating the supergravity action in terms of fields which are defined as functional of the boundary values. And so these phi naughts are on the ADS side boundary sources for the fields, and on the conformal field theory side, they're gauge invariant, the sources for the gauge invariant operators. And so the correspondent relates operators with fields on the ADS side. In particular, if you look at the symmetric traceless combination of scalar fields, in Spurrier-Niels is related to some supergravity modes. And we'll actually be later focusing on these guys. The questions which were kind of not addressed in this picture is, we have basically derived supergravity from Spurrier-Niels, but how about string theory? And the point is that string modes would correspond to operators with very large number of, with very large conformal dimension. And one does not really know how to describe that. One thing in that one doesn't know how to compute the string spectrum on ADS5 versus 5, unlike in flat space. So that these are the questions we'll be trying to address. So what can we say about string theory related to force parameters? So I plan to say a few not several things, but I'll just mention a few things. So Penrose has this idea that if you look near null geodesic, the space becomes a PP wave. And a particular limit one takes is where one of the light-like coordinates remains fixed. The other one is scaled in a particular way, like one over r squared, and the rest of the coordinates are scaled as one over r, and then one takes r to infinity. And this kind of limit takes any sort of metric into a plane fronted gravitational wave metric. And yeah, I had some think about that, but I think So, so PP waves are objects which objects which are mostly flat space except for a part which multiplies dx plus squared. And this is in general a function of both x plus and the transverse coordinates. And one can write down a number of solutions of this type for 11 dimensions of gravity. But the particular ones, so in particular, there's a solution corresponding to the B0 brain, which is a solution which is flat at infinity. However, there's also a subclass which is not flat at infinity, where h is grows quadratically at infinity. And for a general type of solution of this type, the solution preserves half of supersymmetry. But there are some particular, there's a particular case which preserves maximal supersymmetry. In the case of 11-dimensional supergravity, the corresponding maximal supersymmetric solution was found by Kowalski-Glickman in 84. And just corresponds, so this solution corresponds to a particular kind of function, H. And one can do exactly the same thing for type 2B supergravity. This was done in the paper last October. So the general solution, again, depends on the function h of x, x plus, and so it has half supersymmetry. But there's one particular solution you would be interested in, this one, which has maximal supersymmetry. And in here, the solution depends on a parameter nu, but this could, in principle, I mean, this dependency could be absorbed by just rescaling x plus and x minus. But we'll be keeping it because
is there any analogous proof that we know all of the maximally supersymmetric solutions of 2B?
I'm not sure. I mean, it should be basically the same, but I haven't thought about it. I guess it should be the same kind of proof. I'm not sure. I haven't seen it, but
there are more fields to play with in that theory.
Yeah, that's true. And the observation which was post factum sort of obvious, but took at least me a while to figure this out, was that this maximum supersymmetric solution are actually Penrose limits of the ABS cross S cases. For particular, ABS 5 cross S 5, if we boost along an equator of BS 5, so if you look at null geodesic, which goes around the equator of S 5 and sits at the center defined by rho equals 0, theta equals 0, this coordinates. If expand near rho equals 0 in here and theta equals 0 in here, this should be a theta, of course. This one. And so if we do that, we can figure out that this 5 metric goes over to the supersymmetric PP wave metric. And correspondingly, both of these two solutions, ABS 4 cross 7 and ABS 7 cross 4, go to the Kowalski-Glickman solution. And, well, there's other cases one can think of. ABS 3 cross S 3 with a combination of Amaron and NS fields goes over to a certain PP wave of this type. Near horizon NS5 grain metric goes over to Napier-Witten geometry. Try to make lots of other limits. Okay, so what's so interesting about this PD wave? Well, the interesting part is that one can really solve explicitly Lee Schwartz action in this Ramon-Ramon background. This is found by Matsayev last December. And we just realized this fact on next day paper that I here. We were forced to try to go further than that, and then we tried to explain how this string spectrum are from spirals. Anyway, so usually the point is that usually in my own background it's hard even to write down explicitly the action, but in this case we can not only write it, but we can actually solve it explicitly. And I had written some derivation of the action in here, but I guess that's not really important. So I'll be just showing the final result of the calculation. So one has an action which is just massive scalars and fermions. So massive scalars are the coordinates transverse to the wave, and the fermions in here are two-dimensional Majorana spinners. They're also spinners of the SO8 rotation group, polycyclicality spinners. This is a free theory of massive bosons and fermions.
This is a theorem also, right, that PP waves and flat space exhaust the case where you can choose like an engage and get the quadratic action?
I'm not sure. It might be true, but I'm not sure. I mean, it's certainly true that for a PP wave one could write down such an action, but I'm not sure if the reverse is true. That's the only case where.
I mean, first of all, the PP wave stands for a much more general class,
yeah,
and it's not true for all PP waves that the action is quadratic.
Yeah,
it's only for these plane waves. Now, it's easy to show that if you want to go to Lycombe gauge and also have conformal gauge, basically do the usual steps that we do in flat space, the PP waves are the only solution. But you could go to Lycombe gauge without having conformal gauge. And then you have this former general framework, and I'm not sure. So,
should we move this table up a little bit so that it's automatic? Also, it would be good to decouple this table from the rest of the table.
Sorry. It's just the last
one.
It's
clear.
Oh,
okay.
Can you refocus it?
No, I am not happy yet.
That's much better.
Anyway, so it's a free theory of massive scalars and spinners, and if we Fourier expand on the closed string coordinate sigma, then we get, in the usual way, get the sort of harmonic oscillators, but with a frequency which is different from flat space. Namely, has this form, constant piece, and then a piece depending on P plus, and N, on the level N. And the condition for translation invariance in the sigma direction, namely that there is no momentum in that corresponding direction, is the same as in flat space. And flat space is obtained as a limit where we take this parameter mu, the scale which we introduce in magic, take it to zero. If you remember both the field strength and the metric depended on this mu, and they become just a flat space case and goes to zero. And indeed, we see that if we put mu equal to zero, we get the flat space result. But there's also another limit we can be interested in, and that's actually what we're going to explore the most, is the limit of large Ramo-Ramo background, where this term is smaller compared to this. So we can expand the frequency. First order is 1. First order is the same for all the oscillators, and we have a correction. And we want to do the same thing for maybe a 3 process 3, but that doesn't, we haven't explored that in any way from the dual side, so we'll talk about that. So, what happens to the ABS-CFT correspondence in this Penrose limit? So we said that the ABS-5 process 5 goes over to this 10-dimensional wave. And in this 10-dimensional wave, the energy is generator of translations, angular momentum with respect to this psi, but we can think of it as rotating two of the directions perpendicular to the d3 grains. So if we think of the Yamil side, the energy is mapped to conformal dimension of an operators, and this angular momentum is mapped to an R charge of an operator. And since this angular momentum is supposed to be rotating to direction 5 and 6, corresponding R charge will be rotating scalars 5 and 6. And momentum on the PP wave corresponds as follows. P minus corresponds to delta minus j, and P plus to delta plus j over r squared. This r squared factor comes because we rescale the coordinates in a particular way. And so these are the parameters of the Yamil's operator. And now if we're studying string theory in these PP wave backgrounds, that means that we keep this P plus and P minus finite. That means that this object has to be of order 1. So delta plus j of order r squared and then minus j of order 1. And that's easy to see that this corresponds to j of order r squared or root n. We'll be looking at operators with large conformal dimension, large r charge. So that means with a large number of fields. So that's a particular subset of all the operators of radical force and everything else. We saw that the PP wave limit corresponds to taking r to infinity. So that means we have to take g squared n to infinity on top of the ABS limit. But another way to think about that is that the coupling is fixed and small and just n goes to infinity. The advantage of this being that we should be able to keep string interactions to g and mil squared correspond to gs. And that's something we're thinking about now, and we should hopefully be publishing that soon. So we look at operator with large delta nj. Moreover, these operators have a special property. They're near BPS because delta minus j is small. And the point is that in the algebra, the commutator of Q with Q is P minus, which corresponds to delta minus J. So there is a sense in which, delta minus J equal to zero is really a BPS state. And since this has a large number of fields, saying delta minus J is small is a well-defined near BPS limit. On top of this, limits, we have to impose an extra condition. The condition comes as follows. The PP wave has giant gravitons, which are just these grains wrapped on an S3. These are just giant gravitons which happen to be present in ABS 5 process 5 too. And if you just take this Penrose limit, they are still there. And the condition is these giant gravitons have to be unimportant. We have want to describe string theory, not giant graviton theory. So that means that the size of these objects has to be much smaller than the string scale. And that brings the condition that J must be much smaller than root n over J n hills. So what do we want to do next? Well, we want to find an operator which corresponds to the string state of a particular energy. And we know that for n equal to 0, the 0 mode strength of the string should correspond to the gravity mode, same way.
Excuse me, I thought the point of the giant graviton was that it had the same energy as the original. If the original graviton is a null particle, staying at the origin, and that's what you do the original Penrose limit on. But I thought the point of the giant graviton was that there was a degenerate state. So these are three D3 brains wrapped on S3s and ADS5.
Right, which wrapped into some S3 in this particular way, yeah.
Okay. And wasn't the idea that there was a degeneracy, that you could sort of saturate this BPS bound with sort of delta equals J, both for a configuration that was sort of spread out and that was sort of localized? So, if I'm remembering that right, I'm wondering.
I'm just saying that if these states are in the theory, then when you look at the particular subset of Yang-Mills operator, we should see these states too. But we want to look at just string theory. Therefore, the condition on that is just to say that these giant graviton states are negligible. So they're quantum as opposed to classical. If there are large classical states, then we should actually take them into account. But
where does that condition? I mean, somehow that's a statement that the energy, if your condition is satisfied, the energy of the giant graviton will be much bigger, much higher than the energy of the original graviton?
It cannot.
That's my puzzle. So I don't know. I mean, what is this condition coming
from? Well, the fit is very small. And basically, once you make it on below the string scale, I mean, if you make the giant graviton very, very small below the string scale,
then it's indistinguishable.
It's indistinguishable from the graviton. So basically, you are still doing string. I mean, instead of seeing a large D brain, you're just doing like a small stringy mush in like a very small region.
So this is the condition that the giant graviton is not too giant.
Yeah.
Right, that's another way of phrasing it.
So the equilibrium radius becomes small.
Right.
So the same condition as that.
So we had a J of order G Yang-Mills square root N, but much smaller than square root N over G Yang-Mills. That's valuable. Right. So we want that N equals 0 state correspond to superiority modes, and there was recently a paper by Nazaire that studied these superiority modes, but I'm not sure. I haven't studied
small, right?
I'm sorry?
Just over the
G and mills should be very small. Yeah.
So you said that G was order square root of M in G and mills?
Right.
And therefore, I don't think so, it's compatible.
G and mills is small.
Yeah,
so G and mills is small, so one over G and mills is big, right? So. So let's derive strings from Yang-Mills theory. First observation, which actually we won't be using it at the beginning, but we'll talk about later, is that neutral force pairing is a conformal field theory. So we have operator state correspondence. In the two dimensions, this was correspondence between radial quantization on a plane and cylinder. And what we did was dimensionally reduce fields on the circle. On this S1 in here, fixed size, and obtain some quantum mechanical system. And what used to be an operator with the BN acting on a field in the plane, or equivalently, becomes now a Kaluza Klein mode of number n. And since this is a quantum mechanical system, this can be mapped to an A plus A dagger. And so basically, the operator state correspondence maps a BNX with a operator, a and dagger on zero, on translate. And so the same kind of thing one can do in four dimensions, and radial quantization on R4 corresponds to this cylinder where now is, we have a nice tree across the time. And again, we dimensional reduce fields on S3, and take some quantum system. And again, the number of derivatives of Xn corresponds to pulsar Klein mode. And the corresponding statement in here, we'll describe it a few pages later. Look at the string spectrum. Let's try to draw the string spectrum in this background. So let's look at first the fields in Young Mills, and let's group them by the value of delta minus j. Scalar fields have dimension 1, and then we have to look for something which is charged. So to make this combination 5-5 plus 5-5-6, this has charge under the R-symmetry which rotates 5 and 6. And this is the unique field with delta minus j equal to 0. That's fine. That means that if you want something which has 0 p minus, but it lasts made up of j units, we should take this state. Trace z to the power of j. That's a unique state with delta minus j equals 0. So this is where we have our string vacuum. And then we have to look for oscillators. And where do we find them? Well, actually, we find them in by looking at fields with delta minus j equal to 1. Notice that there are 8 bosonic and 8 fermionic such fields. Okay. Four bosons, four scalars, and there are originally 6 scalars in the theory, and 2 of them correspond to this z, and so we're left with other 4. And on top of that, there's 4 spatial derivatives on z. They have to be Courant derivatives because we're looking at Legendre-Grand operators. And similarly, there's 8 fermionic fields. There are 16 of them, but half of them has charge minus 1/2, and half of them has charge. And there's lots of other fields, but we'll see that these are the only ones which are important for us. Now this state in here, trace z to the j, is a Spaghetti mode in a particular wave function. Remember that we're talking about maybe a CFT correspondence, we're talking about a state with it was symmetric traceless combinations of scalar fields. So this particular state is that's Spaghetti mode in a particular wave function. How do we generate all the states in the mode of that? In string theory, what we should do is supposed to act with a zero mode on the vacuum. The Spaghetti, the corresponding statement is we should act with the symmetries of the theory. So, in particular, we should act with symmetries which don't leave this vacuum invariant. So one would be where we rotate this angle 5-6 into some other angles. But when we do that, we change the value of delta minus j. You could see that in the algebra. For instance, this j plus I doesn't mean this p minus. So, what happens when we act with this symmetry operator? The symmetry operator maps our vacuum, our Young-Mills state trace z to the j, to this state. So it rotates one of the z's into a phi, and then it can rotate any of them. So we get this sum, and basically still the trace is the same as putting phi in the first position. And as we said, by doing this, we change the value of delta minus j because phi has okay, and what kind of operators are we looking at? Well, we want to look at small number of string excitations. So that means small number of insertions of this spot. And that means that we're looking at near BPS operators. So let's look at two fields when we act with two symmetry operators. So first one, introduce one phi, we act with the symmetry once more, we introduce another field. For instance, here I acted with the supersymmetry and I introduced the fermion. And by the same cyclicity of the trace, we can put one of the fields to the first position, but then the second one has to be summed of all directions. But we said that we look at small number of insertions, small number of these extra fields. So that means that when we do this symmetry operation, we can neglect the case where we act twice on the same operator. So if we act with supersymmetry, if I would act first, I would get a fermion. If I would act second time, I would get, say, an F mu. I'm saying this term is neglected because it's a word of 1 over j. There are j more terms of this type. So we talk all the time about this Galois Grass approximation, that's a very low number of insertions. And so the general statement is we put lots of phi's in here and some of their position that corresponds to number of insertions of these zero ones. And that's fine. All of this, however, is still supergravity. Zero modes correspond to supergravity. So what happens to string theory? Where is the string theory? Well, to add a string state, we have to add momentum on the string. And so the momentum corresponds to a factor of e to the I and sigma. Now, a discrete version of that is e to the I n times 2 pi L over j. So that's what we should introduce. So we're looking at states of this type.
Well, that's assuming that L somehow is the one.
Oh, sigma.
Yes.
It turned out to be true in the end, but it's... So we do find states which have this energy.
Yeah, I know,
but it's an obvious guess, and it's the right one in the end. So what happens is that acting with a particular string state on the vacuum is acting with phi here and putting corresponding phases. And we can also see very nicely that if we put just one phi, this is zero by cyclicity of the trace because I can put the phi in the first position and then this sum is zero.
Mm-hmm.
And that just corresponds to the momentum constraint saying that the total momentum on the string has to be zero. So we need at least two oscillators. We could put the phi n and the phi minus n. So we have a discretized string with j sides corresponds to a supernumerous operator of dimension j with j operators. So we have a picture where the string is composed of bits, and one bit is one z, at least for the ground state, because it carries one unit of u plus. J equals 1 is one unit of this. And insertion of momentum state corresponds to insertion of this guy, and the string state corresponds to just summing over all possible words where insert this phi in various positions. And planar diagrams dominate in the Young-Yale's theory, so the way we scale this. And so the planarity of diagrams on the Young-Yale side, we'll see next transparency corresponds to locality on the string. So the two-dimensional field theory on the string is a local one. and the fact that the string Hamiltonian acts on states is the mapping to the fact that Feynman diagrams act, quote-unquote, on operators. And what we want to derive now, as we said, this was some sort of assumption that this string state corresponds to something like this. So we want to derive, actually, that there is a state with delta minus j corresponding to this string frequency.
Can you say mu equal to 1 at this point?
Yeah. Right, okay. Yeah. No, actually, I'm sorry. No, the point is mu becomes a common factor, right? So I write 1 plus and then 1 over mu squared times the rest, and that's equal to this. But yeah, I said mu equal to 1, but it's a common factor, so I can just say this. It's a scale, actually, at this point. Let's do a computation. First, we can do just a perturbative calculation. And at the free level, so we're doing the perturbative calculation of the conformal dimension. So looking at this correlator, OX, O star, O. And in a free theory, it's just planar diagram where we just connect this these operators. And the fact that planar diagrams dominate, that means I can only have an interaction which hops one side. Because if I would have something connecting this to, say, this, that would be a non-planar diagram, right? The only planar diagrams hop one side at most. And this kind of interaction comes from the terminal Lagrangian like this. So we compute this guy, and we obtain certain value for delta minus j, which is the right one, the first perturbative correction. So we're happy, at least in this in this case, we've proved it. Moreover, we are in the dilute gas approximations. So that means that generically insertions are not near each other. So you can just treat them independently with a 1 over j error and obtain that delta minus j is the sum of all this. And that's just the corresponding formula for string calculation. And what's interesting in here is these operators are near BPS, so we get this correction factor of n squared over j squared. If we wouldn't have this, of course, this particular calculation wouldn't make sense because g squared the angles is infinite in our case. And it would be pointless to try to do that. But what saves us is that we have this n squared over j squared suppression. So now we have done the first step. Can we do the whole square root? Turns out we can, actually.
I mean, you've actually shown that all the other contributions cancel?
We still have some problems. I'll say in a few transparency what we neglect. But we did prove that. So we computed the first correction in Young-Mills theory, and now by a certain trick, we'll be able to compute the whole square root.
I know, but I'm just asking, I read your paper, but I'm just trying to find out.
What is the approximation? I'll be coming back in one or two transparencies, so.
Okay.
So, so we said that we're looking at this operator's state correspondence, so we can either say we look at operators on R4 or on Supermiel states on S3 cross R. And when we do a Kautz-Klein expansion of fields, this tower corresponds to various derivatives acting on the fields. And each of these fields corresponds to n squared harmonic oscillators because these guys have matrix indices. And the ground state corresponds, therefore, to stray z to j, but the operator state corresponds back in the last three daggers. Zero. We'll be calling this state 0 prime. And an insertion of a field 5 in here corresponds to inserting in here an opt B dagger corresponding to the field 5. And so the states we get in here are words up to cyclicity of the trace. But nice observation by Mar and Bergdorf here was that the n equal infinity matrix structure is encoded in this object is called free random variables, and the associated oscillators are Kahn's oscillators, where this algebra is defined like this. Usually you have a dagger minus a dagger, that a is equal to 1. That's a certain limit of the QD formation of this. And except for this commutation, the only other relation we have is the one which comes from completeness, namely this. So in particular, we cannot commute, say, 2A daggers, for instance, 2 different A daggers. So this Kahn's oscillator described the word structure up to cyclicity of the trace, because we can't commute things anymore. We get states like this, where now there's no more n-squared indices. All right. Now, the next thing I'm be interested in the original picture where you had n-squared these guys, the operator state correspondence tells us that if we have a Hamiltonian acting on states, that corresponds on the operator side to all possible contraction of the Hamiltonian of the operator. Right? So that can be made explicit in this picture, and then we'll see soon how this what does this mean in the Kahn's operator picture. But before we do that, the next simplification we're trying to do is get rid of the A's. So we said we are in dilute gas approximation where there's few of these B daggers, but many of these A daggers. We can just forget them. But then we have to remember that we insert operators at certain position on this A. So let's define some B with index J, which means I just insert a B dagger along a string of these A daggers. And now it's easy to see that these B daggers obey a one Kahn's oscillator algebra, namely B dagger is 1, and B dagger B is 1 minus 0, 0. And then I said that the Hamiltonian acting on states corresponded to all possible contractions of the Hamiltonian with an operator. And when we translate that into what happens for the Kahn's oscillator, we get that the action of the Hamiltonian on states corresponds to the action of this Hamiltonian. So the total Hamiltonian is a kinetic term plus this gas.
Can you explain that?
I'm sorry?
How does that help?
So you can see, for instance, that. So let's look at. So we have such a term plus. Two such terms minus B dagger J squared minus B dagger J plus 1 squared, right? Let's look at this term. And that corresponds to so let's look. H interaction was Z phi Z bar phi phrase. can rewrite this as trace let's put the z bar first phi z bar phi z phi phi and there are two of these terms I guess minus z bar phi squared z z bar z phi squared. And now let's contract with something where we have a phi in here. So let's say z oh no, sorry. This term corresponds to just z. Right. So let's contract z bar with z in here. So a single contraction. That means that we insert in here 2 phi z phi minus phi squared z minus z bar z phi squared. That means minus z phi squared. Right? So we delete the z and we introduce this guy. Now this, in here, before that, there are jz. And so what we're doing here is we're inserting this, which corresponds to a b dagger j. We put a z, so the next term is b dagger j plus 1. Right? And then minus this, which corresponds to b dagger j squared, minus this, which corresponds to b dagger j plus 1 squared. And then for the next terms, we have to put in here 1 phi to get b dagger b, but that actually doesn't work well. I mean, the point being that there are self-contractions too. This is something one can calculate, so one has to say that if you look at VPS state, this should be equal to 0 and give some trick to figure that out.
Sorry, that's to get the cross term.
Right, b dagger. So these guys, one has to think about what happens if you replace the b with an a, right? When you have a VPS state. This is some sort of zero-point oscillation one has to figure out. And then b dagger, the e terms, one has to look at the case where you have to divide them. Right. You have to, if you act as two b's, one has to delete two phi's, not phi. But it's the same thing.
So that could really be derived.
Yeah.
Now, at one point you said you were working the little gas approximation, but when you start this operator,
well,
what's in things which are right on top of each other? You know?
Yeah, so, you know, otherwise you can just say you have this first term and then you write down the relativistic internalization of this.
Okay.
But you have this term, you have calculated this term,
yeah.
And then we just write down the relativistic generalization of this. We have not only have a b dagger, but a b plus b dagger instead. That's so, I don't know.
No, but the thing, I was just saying that you were.
Yeah,
the dilute gas approximation.
I know, but otherwise there's no way to derive the b squared term, right? So if you want to derive that, for example.
So I mean, is it still consistent in like a 1/j? Previously, you said those terms were small, down by 1/j compared to terms. So is the statement that the whole action just appears at order 1/j or something?
I'll have to think about that, but
maybe the interaction term should, because it has this gn. As you just said, a gn without a 1/j will diverge in the limit that you're interested in. But if the interaction term does go like 1/j, then it would be of the same order as the kinetic term.
Right. Okay, I'll have to think about that. Anyway, so then then we have calculated this interaction. And now let's look at what it meant to have a string state. Well, a string state was this guy. It's actually with two of these files, but that's for the moment. And this is zero. Let's look for the moment. What does it mean? This means acting with a B dagger L on a state 0 prime, which is trace Z to the J, and putting a momentum factor, right? So we see that we have an operator, which is this guy, acting on 0 prime. So indeed, if we define this guy, and moreover look at B plus B minus N, which is the right thing to do because we need to put a phi in here, the corresponding phi of momentum minus N, and the Hamiltonian becomes just, it's a diagonal Hamiltonian, and it becomes just this, this perturbed harmonic oscillator, a sum of perturbed harmonic oscillators. And the fact that we did the dilute gas approximation is helping us because these Bs were Kunz oscillators. But however, Bns now, if we act on states on the dilute gas approximations, are approximately equal to usual ones. So Bn, B dagger M acting on such a state is delta Mn plus order 1 over J corrections.
I think it bothers me is once you act with your Hamiltonian on a state in a dilute gas, which is dilute, you get a state that isn't dilute.
Well, we can take the point of view that this is only for the B squared piece, and the B dagger squared and the B dagger piece is still okay. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it might be okay, but it's not easy. Because you have to iterate, right?
The next interaction you say again.
What?
The next interaction is again, because they're close together, is that?
Yeah, because the phi squareds are right in front of you. Or separated by one.
Because the interaction has no term that's deleting over 1 over J. There's no J to the 0 term. So if you keep the first term, it would be you have to put two things right next to each other. So it would have to go like 1 over J. But then this Gn is getting large as that's getting small. I don't know how it's consistent with. It's consistent with the interaction being in the same order. I don't know how it's consistent with staying in the approximation.
Okay, the whole point of introducing this Kunz algebra was to take into account the subtleties which arise from these collide.
Well, I mean, the point in here is that
you could just say that B plus B dagger is.
Well, historical note, how we started looking about these things. We first realized that we have to look at operators of these types and BJs, and then we tried to derive these guys. But we first started with regular oscillators.
Yes.
If you figure out, if you try to put a regular oscillator, you get in here, if you think of the normalization of states, get them 1 over root 2 for these guys. Don't, can't have that. Absurd. So then we try to figure out what happened, and we remember that this actually comes from Kunz oscillators, and you have no root to it.
But Kunz oscillators precisely take into account the subtleties of the collision of.
The Kunz algebra is to look at this fact that you have oscillators which do not commute into each other. That's the thing we're using. Right?
But they do commute if they're on the different sides. It's only if you put two on the same side that the subtleties.
No, I think the point is that you have a set of Kunz oscillators and they do not commute, right? They do not commute with each other. I mean, you can define two things. You can define one Kunz oscillator algebra, which is these BJs, or many Kunz oscillator algebra, on which you say that the different oscillators do not commute with each other. And that's what happened, right, in the matrix theory. So that's what we're using. Right? We want to describe these words. The fact that when you put a trace, something inside, then it matters in which order you put the field inside.
It matters only if you put more than one B.
Well, yeah.
So what you're saying is that it doesn't, for large J, it's the same as Yeah, I get states of Hamiltonian are the same as, or same as if you use.
Right. No, so for this approximation, right, of large J and small number of insertions, the eigenstates are the same as the eigenstates.
And you could construct eigenstates out of this Hamiltonian.
Well, I'm not sure, because generally you get some ugly term in here, which, however, in this case is subleading.
Some quadratic.
Right, but anyway, it looks not very nice. So. Yeah. So, anyway, the point is that once we get these perturbed harmonic oscillators, we know what to do. A perturbed harmonic oscillator, just do a Bogoliubov transformation. You mix the B's and B daggers, and then the omega is square root 1 plus the B's.
Sorry, another thing. BJ is type on the 0 mod on S3. What is the justification for neglecting higher modes in principle? They also run into loop on 0.
I'll come to that next transparency. What approximations did we use in this calculation? It was perturbative in N over J, but that's fine. We want to have large J and small n. We use the dilute gas approximation. What's the interpretation of this Hamiltonian? Well, one can see that this Hamiltonian is just a discretized Hamiltonian on the string. If you write this Hamiltonian, then phi r squared and phi squared combine into this, and phi slash squared has this discretized version. And so that means that the insertion of phi at side j corresponds to bj dagger, which corresponds to the quantum fluctuation at side j of this string field. What do we actually sum in doing this thing? Well, we're actually iterating H interaction, this commutator term. So we're summing diagrams of this type. So in here, for instance, this diagram corresponds to B dagger squared term, this corresponds to a B dagger B term, and this corresponds to a B squared term, right? So now the question, what do we neglect? And we neglect two things. First, we neglect generally higher loop expressions. So things of this type, you have some sort of blob in here, which is generally higher loop, not just an iteration of the one loop thing. But presumably there should be some sort of normal renormalization theorems analogous to the ADS5 versus 5 case, and that would be really interesting to study, but I don't know how to do that.
Why should there be? Because you got the right result without improvement.
So you know, you get the right result, and you know that things like that happen in the ADS5 versus 5 case, so it seems reasonable to assume the same thing that happened. But it's by no means any proof, just a hope. And the other thing is, as you said, you know, what happens to other fields running in the loops, right?
No, about harmonics on SOP.
Yeah, these are, you know, these fields, the regular fields are only, you know, for small delta minus j, but the large ones come when you act with derivatives on fields, or correspondingly when you look at the power of filter line harmonics. The question is, what happens to these? Well, we can have only a heuristic argument, so we looked at one particular such object, namely z bar. Z bar has delta minus j equal to 2. And we can compute perturbatively this delta minus j, the same way we did. And we get something which is not suppressed. So we get something which goes like gn instead of having this n squared over j squared suppression. Now, this is a perturbative computation. We can obviously not interpolate that to the large GN case. But if we did, that is sort of suggestive that in the GN going to infinity limit, this guy becomes very massive, delta minus J. It's very large. then it can decay. So look at this diagram, and then the bar can decay by this interaction to 2,5, which this diagram is also very cheap. So that is the hope. That, again, that is not a proof in any way, but it's suggestive. With perturbative calculation seems to go in the right direction. And
I'm just a little puzzled about this. So if I understood correctly, you said that all the sort of higher excited states of a string come about by inserting two phis, one sort of at the first spot and the second one summed over all these different suspensions.
Many phis, sure. No, not only two phis.
Okay, so
every time you insert a phi, you get an equation
operator. Right. But
the variation operators are two, basically. So every time you have a
phi,
right.
Whatever it is, the string of Z corresponds to it.
Right.
The thing that has two phis is the interaction term that they
have as well. Right.
I see. So all the string states have many phis.
String states have many phis. No, so I put two phis in my string. I'm saying that you cannot put one because of the cyclicity of the trace or equivalent in the momentum constraints.
Okay.
But you have to put many in such a way that the total momentum is zero.
Yeah. So delta minus j gets big. I mean,
well, it can
be excited states of a string.
No. This in here, I was computing something else.
I know that the Z bar is a different story,
right.
But just in terms of the fact that these states have many phis in them,
right,
means that delta minus j equals 4 or 5. Those are all included.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, remember that delta minus j is sum over nn times omega n, right? So n can be anything, can be 5, 10, whatever. So by this argument, you could say, well, why doesn't the same happen to the fields literally at delta minus j equals 1? Well, we can think of them that they don't get such a large mass because they're really Gaussian bosons and fermions of broken symmetries, and their masses should still be protected by Spitzman delta. That's some sort of, I don't know, physical interpretation to this.
We
actually did the calculations.
So wasn't the delta minus j equal 1, but what about the other delta minus j?
Right, so these are the ones which
those
remain.
Those are just the zero ones, right?
No, these are, we only insert delta minus j equal to 1 fields, right? The zero modes have no momentum, and the higher modes will put a momentum factor. But we're always looking at delta minus j equal to 1 fields.
Which?
So delta minus j equal to 1 are these phis, and di is z, and the chi with j equals 1/2. Right. So,
one second.
So I said, I said that we introduce, so these zero modes correspond to these guys, right? But then non-zero modes correspond to the same guys with a phase factor. And all of these guys have delta minus j equal to 1. Right.
Question? Can you elaborate on the Goldstone boson argument? So there's 30 symmetries in the background. Okay. Let's just take the bosonic symmetries. There's translations in x plus and x minus, and there's SO4 across SO4. Right. So that still leaves you with, I guess, 18. And no, 16. 12 and then 2. And then, so you say you found 8 Goldstone bosons. Which of the other, so there's the 16 symmetries that remain involve various rotations and involve both the other 8 directions and the light cone directions. I would think that having a thing moving along this geodesic would break all 16 of those and not just 8. And then you'd end up with 16 protected operators.
No, I'm saying the vacuum breaks. So the vacuum breaks, we're choosing.
No, the vacuum doesn't, the vacuum has 30 bosons.
Yeah, okay, no, but we're saying when we choose, when it goes to the PP wave limit,
mm-hmm.
we're choosing a direction on which to boost. Yes. That is the breaking I'm talking about, right?
You don't break any of the 30 symmetries.
No, initially you have,
if you had an excitation of the PP wave at some P plus, that defines a momentum vector with P plus not equal to zero, and that will break symmetry.
No, but the point is that when you choose a vacuum, you break the symmetry, right? This is saying, you know, the Mexican hat potentially, you choose a direction. In this case, you choose a direction on which to boost.
Yeah,
initially, all the directions are equivalent.
I understand that, but on the other hand, you start with 32 supercharges and 30 isometries, and then you boost to the PP wave, and you still have 32 superchargers and 30 isometries. I mean, every single bosonic symmetry of the original background is observed. Appropriately scaled.
Yeah, but for instance, I mean, what I'm saying is, you had them.
In other words, so take the S5, for example. You're making out a great circle on the S5, and obviously you preserve the symmetries that preserve that great circle. And you might think that you're breaking the symmetries that rotate the great circle in with the other directions on the S5, but actually those are unbroken, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the point is that the symmetry of the PP wave is just a contraction of the symmetry of the
S5. Right. You don't lose any general. Yeah, when I read that statement, I thought that it meant that you were actually exciting something with P plus not equal to zero, and that's why.
Well, what he means now, I guess what he's saying is some of those symmetries, like the one that rotates in way or something else, mm-hmm. won't commute with this Hamiltonian.
Yeah, certainly. That's
and you say there are exactly eight of those.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
Wouldn't it correspond to those operators we shift into minus j equals exactly to one?
I'm sorry?
There are some operators which excite the minus j equals exactly to 1. Those which you excite only alpha 0, but not alpha n, for example, 0. Wouldn't they be a plus 1 bonus?
Isn't that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's the one.
So, but those are kind of, it's given with the complement dimensions.
Right.
So that's why you're arguing those are protected.
Yeah.
Oh, but not those with square roots.
I'm sorry?
Not those which have square roots. Those are not those. Not those.
No,
square root is above delta minus j.
If delta minus j equal to square root 1 plus more, right?
But for some it's just 1.
Is 1 in the approximation and is small. Just 1 plus the correction.
They cannot be solved in Gaston bosons. Gaston bosons are only when the second term on the square root is 0.
Yeah, sure. Sure, right. But the point is that we could introduce things where we have 2 plus more, and these are not going on.
Actually, 2 plus?
2 plus some correction. Square root 2 plus. This
is too much.
Well, I mean, not square root 9. The point is, it's 2 plus something which is actually not subtracted by another j. So.
This formula with square root is true on the strong coupling or it's true at weak coupling also?
I'm sorry? This formula with square root is actually true as it's true when the second term is big too. Yeah.
Then two parameters very much.
It's infinite, but the point is even when two parameter over j squared is large, it's still valid.
It's
It's supposed to be exact in token parameter over J. Rather receives one over J.
Right, if I try to introduce the perturbation theory, I won't get this result at small j, right?
Because the perturbation theory doesn't make sense, but
to reduce the quantum mechanics, you really need it. For to reduce this to quantum mechanical problem, you really need a large truth parameter. Otherwise, it won't reduce to quantum mechanics.
Truth parameter is infinite. Truth parameter is infinite. That's the point. Is the truth parameter over J squared is large or small? I'm saying perturbative calculation makes sense when this is small, but the full square root is true even when this is not small. So let me skip over the MTA thing, just say a few brief words about what happens when like what we're doing now. And so we're trying to look at we're looking at open strings in this n equal to super conformal field theory corresponding to ABS 5 process 5 mod Z2. This theory has quarks in the fundamentals, so the open strings have just quarks at the end. For the moment, however, we're not agreeing on some things, so I won't be saying much more about this. And we're also discussing string interactions, when a string goes to two strings and string loops. But for that, we need to understand non-planar diagrams, and we have some understanding, and there are some other things which
the string interactions arise from just one over, but you also have, you have one over n corrections, you have one over j corrections, which are in the same order. So it's not just non-planar diagrams.
No. I mean, in particular, string interactions are where, I mean, you have one operator going to two operators.
This is not the usual large limit.
This is not the usual large limit, no.
So there are a lot of one over n corrections.
Right.
But
in particular,
non-planar diagrams, right?
In particular, we can study the where one string goes to two strings. We sort of understand that. So that's one operator going one trace going to two traces, right? Mm-hmm. And that is of order g squared Young-Mills, as it should. But this is one has to think about various diagrams in the model. But there, on top of that, there's also string loops in the same way as Toff said, so, have non-diagonal diagrams. This will correspond to really string loops. There are also other PP ways one can study. You could study, it should be very interesting to study this ABS 3 process 3 wave case. I mean, we found the string theory, but one has to find the field theory interpretation for that. And also near horizon NS5 to B-brain, this snappy Whitman model might be interesting. Some other questions. And of course, the hope would be to look at non-conformal theories, but it's not very clear how one would do that. We're also trying to figure out to derive how what this matrix model does, but I haven't talked about it, so.
Which matrix model?
So we will matrix model corresponding to the 11 dimensional PP wave. We just wrote a D0 plane Lagrangian in this 11 dimensional wave metric, and then we generalize it by introducing usual terms and the Myers term. And you get the DLCQ. Model, but we don't know exactly what to do with it.
So, one second, this is the matrix theory that's supposed to describe the 11 dimensional PP wave.
And for the moment, we just wrote it down, we don't have any interpretation for it.
So, how is this related to the usual matrix model for 11 dimensional?
Like, I'd like to know, I mean, the difference in between these two is in the ground space. For usual matrix model, you have, moduli space. I mean, but in this case, the ground states are discrete. The fully supersymmetric ground states of this model are just phi spheres. They have the radius corresponding to the size of the SO2 representation, so that's a discrete number. And they correspond to giant gravitons, spherical and two grains. There's an interesting thing that one also has giant M5 grains, but you can see that these do not correspond to classical solutions because they have radius 1 over kappa to the power 1/4. And so probably they should come about by the correct quantum mechanical treatment of this pi equal to 0 vacuum. So anyway, the nice thing about this model is we have a discrete set of ground states, but I don't really know what to say about how this relates to
that. Right.
But this is the model that supposedly describes the LCQ of the PPU.
Yeah. Okay, and we'll, so another thing we would like to understand is holography. How does holography work in this case? Because, well, we computed really that this PP wave, for instance, has a one-dimensional boundary, not a four-dimensional boundary. So, it's,
what do you call the one-dimensional
boundary? What is the boundary? What do you mean the boundary?
So, like, if you look at ADS, you know that it has a four-dimensional boundary. Moreover, if you look at ADS5 to SS5, boundary is still the same four-dimensional boundary because the S5 shrinks to zero when you when you take out the conformal factor. We did the analogous computation for this metric.
Are you saying all eight dimensions shrink to zero? It's just
the one-dimensional null line. It's not the null line you're looking near, but it's
so the
null line.
The mechanics is somehow there's also like this console.
I don't know. It sounds very intriguing, but I haven't been able to figure out really what that means.
But somehow in the calculation, you're also in calculation essentially just
one-dimensional, right? So might be something.
So there are some cases when people have lower four dimensional boundary.
Sorry?
Computations by Strominger. Not Pavlovich and other cases. Lower for process cases. Boundary is one plus as one.
But usually it's singular. I mean, are you saying that there's a smooth one-dimensional boundary? I mean, in the cases that Andy look at, you rescale and various things are shrinking, you know, down. And, you know, you don't have a smooth boundary. You just say, you know, a certain direction they're getting squished.
Yeah, the same thing happens here.
So here's something. Okay, so it's not a smooth one-dimensional boundary which compactifies the space or something. I mean, Penrose introduced this sort of null-infinity idea because it was a natural smooth completion of the space-time, which added points at infinity and kept all the causal structure, and it was extended to these causal under constant cases. But space sensors are not asymptotically flat or asymptotically de Sitter or asymptotically anti de Sitter. Typically don't have smooth conformal completions. So I suppose that's the case here.
Well, no. No, I mean, the point is one can map this PP wave to a conformally to a flat space. And then, but then the conformal factor is singular, only a one dimensional line.
What is the direction you have to move in to reach this boundary?
Well, this boundary,
you could, I mean, in the original PP wave, you could
figure out some trees in both X plus and X minus.
In this original picture, you could see that there's a radius at infinity, right? There's a boundary at infinity to go in the transverse directions. Or you have, you could go in the X plus directions. But all of these boundaries map into the same thing.
One-dimensional line.
Especially infinity in plus space is a point. Even though you can get there in all directions.
Anyway. Conclusions are, well, string theory in PP wave is, can be solved explicitly. We have derived string theory from Supreme Mills in a certain limit. Class space arises as a limit of the PP wave, and it corresponds to a well-defined limit in superannuals. You could write down a new matrix model with a discrete set of ground states. Lots of other things to further start.
Thank you.